this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and welcome back to Action Jackson. I'm Tomo. Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 10. NASDAQ futures down 101. Dow futures are actually up. But, boy, yesterday, what a carnage. Oil is down 120 this morning. If you're a Bitcoin creature, down $4,400, 82,000, down from 120. Let me get the data on that. Boy, this is ugly. I've never been a fan of the Bitcoin, but I don't want to see people lose money either. And it's just, I've got these guys trading 126 on the Bitcoin maybe 2 months ago. So if, where are we? We are 126.3 on 10.5. And here we are essentially 5 weeks later. Russell estimated that the Bitcoin, that whole area was had about $3 trillion worth of value in it. It's hard to estimate. But if that's the case, that was sort of at the top. So if it topped out at $3 trillion, we're down to well under 2, so that'll leave a mark, and I think we're going to probably find out here pretty soon where all the margin loans are on Bitcoin, whether it's people's houses, whether it's these exchanges, whether it's firms. I think we're about to find out, because if you, I don't know what kind of margin you needed there. I mean, for those that don't know, by the way, we have our guys, we got Lou and Kevin?
Yes, we do.
For those... Just real quickly, on a regular margin, which I think people should know this by now, if you want to call up Merrill Lynch or whoever you want to call up, we call PTI, we don't really have guys like this, but we could. And you want to buy 1,000 shares of IBM, it's trading 291. Instead of sending us 291,000, you can send us 146. And those rates are set by the Federal Reserve, not by your brokerage firm. Your brokerage firm actually could go higher, but they can't go lower because they don't want firms competing on that. But that's your initial margin is 50%. If IBM starts to slink down, your maintenance margin is now 30%. So you don't have to send us or anybody another check until the stock now the margin becomes, your value is only 30% of what you owe. So some of these stocks we're seeing right now, some of these stocks that are the Oracles of the world, those things, if somebody were to bought them on the top, certainly the Bitcoin, you're well into... The phone call, the phone ringing, and I'm wondering if that's what we're seeing a little bit last night and today. Anyway, guys, how are you? Lou, I did not make it on yesterday because we were a little late. We had trouble picking up, getting Jimmy. We did get the second half of the show in with Wayne and Andrew, which is illuminating, but we can't go a week without Lou, especially with next week, Thanksgiving. So Kevin agreed to share or gang up or something. How are you guys?
We're ganging up. How you doing, Lou?
Do we have Lou?
Oh, I know he's in. He's muted, though.
Lou, unmute thyself.
Uh-huh. Well, in the meantime, how's my big-time Ethereum investment going?
I'm going to say not so hot. Let me go back to it. Where did this thing top out at, Kevin? I'll look here in a second.
I don't know. I have, you know, maybe $100 in there.
It's 2681. Let me see what
little dribs of cryptocurrencies, just because a long time ago I wanted to see how everything worked. So there is nothing there to speak of. It's probably down. It's probably down like 5% yesterday. You know, I'll get a message telling me how far it's fallen.
Tippy top was 48.46 on August 23rd. Then it went down, and then it came back up again to 10.5 to 4700. And now it's 26.83. You know, this is
I've lost what, $30.
Yeah. I always ask this question. What happens, and this is so, whatever, I don't want to get into my thoughts on this stuff, but my brother, just to say he was in, I don't know how many years ago this was, Kevin, I mean, it wasn't 20, but it was a few, probably before COVID, he plunked $20 in the ATM and bought Bitcoin. And I think he only ended up with $16.01 of Bitcoin. The other $3.99 were a fee, so that's a little high. But I think he, somewhere along the line, in his old phone that died on him before he had a chance to retrieve anything out of it, I think he lost his password. So what happens to him?
Well, if he lost his password to his wallet, it depends on whether he is the sole control of his wallet, or whether he's signed up with somebody like a Coinbase or something like that, where he can go have it all reset for him. So it just varies. But
he has no access.
It's like locking yourself out of your safe. Yeah.
Well, that's what happened. About one of these days, somebody's gonna have to walk me through. Obviously, I'm very good at how this all happens in stocks, and how if somebody deposits stock with PTI, it's in street name, it's blah, blah, blah. I can tell you exactly where it all goes and where it all is and those kinds of things, and how people can short stock and borrow stock and things like that. I have no idea how that happens with this Bitcoin or any of these other things. I mean, how can you put it essentially in street name where the place controls it and not you?
Yeah, don't know. Never got that interest. Didn't get that far into my level of interest.
Well, I have a feeling that some people
I just wanted to see how you go in, how you make a payment, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, very, very, very simple-minded approach to it, and with, you know, without any substantial investment at all. So I'm not the right guy to be asking a lot about it, because I didn't find it all that interesting, at least personally, for personal. But I just wanted to see how it works. I bought that, and I bought Tether, which is considered a stable coin.
What does that mean?
It means it ties to the dollar or something, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't lose value and gain value in the same ways.
So where would you ever walk in and get an oil change? Where would you ever find somebody to take a Tether coin?
I don't know that you would. You know,
so it's like sort of it's an artificial stack.
Just dabbling. You can find, you know, like online vendors who will take it. There are some if you want to initiate a transaction out of that.
Because we were having a little bit of discussion last night, and I said, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing behind it. Of course, the next utterance out of anybody is, well, what's behind the dollar? A hell of a lot more than behind a Bitcoin. Yeah. I mean, we do have some,
I only brought it up sarcastically.
Why not? But I mean, this is real money for people at this point. I mean, I know of, Nancy's mentioned that she knows of people, I don't know if she's ever done it, that have essentially taken mortgages on their house and bought Bitcoin. I mean, it's, you know, when something is going up, people are momentum traders now. It's why, you know, I'm not supposed to give investment advice on the air. And by the way, I don't. Because I don't think, if I don't know what you have and I don't know the person, I don't know what's in your portfolio, guess what? I shouldn't be giving advice to anybody. It's like a doctor giving you advice over the internet or something when they haven't seen you or something. But anyway, so somebody said last night, I said, you know, there's nothing really behind it. There's nothing that anybody says. I mean, Tom Lee was on yesterday, and he's always been a bull in the market, and he's been right for a long time, so I'm not. But he's, no matter what happens, he's a bull. And yesterday he was on national TV, and I don't know if he's registered or what he is, and he starts talking about the amazing amount of cash. Now, how he knows that, I have no idea. The amazing amount of cash that is hanging around in people's pockets, and the minute Bitcoin makes 75,000, it's some you know, technical bounce, and boy, oh boy, the money is going to come flying in there. The shoot up is going to be way faster than the shoot down. And I'm thinking, boy, oh boy, this guy's pretty smart if he knows all this. I tell you what, I would like to be pretty smart at this too, Kevin, because yesterday was one of the most amazing turnarounds I've ever seen in my 40-some years in the market. I mean, I've never seen, without some sort of an event, you know, the shuttle going down or something like that, without some sort of an event, we had NVIDIA was up, was up like $9, and then turnaround went down $6 or $7, and it's like, you know, we lost our messiah now. There were puts in the QQQs that expired last night. They traded 18 cents. And I think they closed like at $11. I would have loved to spray a few of those around the infield of my clients. What if somebody would have seen their account this morning and see a 10 lot of something I paid $1.80 for and sold it for $10,000 or something? Oops. That's not a bad day.
Hey, I'd like to bring Lou into the conversation, but I want to start.
Is he with us?
Yeah, I'm
oh, here. Okay.
I lost my cursor, and I couldn't unmute my mic. I will just note this entire discussion is exact evidence and proof of why the NFL's gambling issue and sports leagues gambling issues are going concern.
Well, did you see that the after 3 weeks of an episode every week on gambling, the CME, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, has approved a plan to allow sports gambling on the exchange. Their timing couldn't have been better.
Doesn't surprise me a bit. It's the same mentality.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, go ahead, Kevin.
Well, we got to beat this one to death. We don't know where these things are. I mean, I don't see how there's a base here. I mean, if you look at the dates, it looks like in April and May they hit lows this year, and then they came back up from there. So they're not down to April's lows yet. I'm looking at the Ethereum. But, you know, I don't even know how you use a technical analysis on something that you can't even say what it is. But anyway, so go ahead, Lou, because we missed you yesterday. Pile into it. What is the state of sports? By the way, is Illinois the only state that passed that law that says you can't do these prop bets on something somebody individually does?
They're the only ones that I'm aware of. I don't know how you turn that off, and it is, of course, one of the major sources of individual player gambling and individual player influence, and it's going to be a problem. It's a problem now. I don't think any of the major leagues have a handle on how widespread it is among their members. And not just the players. I mean, I expect the coaches. I'm almost certain that ESPN and the major networks are looking back now to try to figure out if any of their commentators are engaged in this stuff. It's a huge issue. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Bitcoin and to a lesser extent a lot of the stock market simply runs on the same kind of mentality.
Well, sure it does. The momentum trading, it goes up. If it's going up, I want in, or I want it in, or something.
Yeah. So anyway,
when you say the sports guys, boy, you listen to these. I used to be nice to say the talking heads. You know, 3 hours before every event, every one of them now. Seemingly every one of them has got his parlay. He's betting. Every single one of the three guys sitting there has their parlay. Where I'm taking. You know, Kevin with over 3 rebounds in the first half, and somebody else with under 4 points in the first half, and this is my parlay. This goes on every night.
Yeah, and so the question is this affecting their coverage? I mean, at least to the extent they're being open about it, I guess it's a good thing. I hearken back to my father sometime in the mid-70s, I think, when CBS, I think it was CBS, started putting Jimmy the Greek on.
Yeah.
On the NFL Today. And
he never did more than points on the game, though.
Yeah, but my father said, this is the camel's nose under the tent, and it's going to explode. He said, we get lectured every the start of every season. You can't deal with gamblers. You can't associate with gamblers. You can't have any affiliation with gamblers. And yet our prime sponsor, our prime vehicle for distributing this product is out there promoting gambling with this guy. And who is his buddy? I guess dump the name of the lead of that show, who's now running a gambling operation in Vegas, the sports...
Was it Brent Musburger?
Brent Musburger. Brent Musburger was good friends with the guy. And a gambling addict, maybe, I don't know, but a gambler in his own right, apparently. And he plugged this thing every week. And I remember thinking to myself, this is kind of crazy. What happens? They're promoting this Poles point spread thing, and at that point you could only do it in Vegas, and I think.
Well, Nevada Vegas was the only Vegas and every barber and every saloon.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean legally you could only do it in Nevada, but and maybe I don't know if the casino reservations had gotten into the gambling at that point yet, but I just remember thinking this is going to be an issue, and It took a little longer than I thought, but here we are.
Well, in those days, you only really had the one bet. Did they even really have over to over-unders? They might have, but it was just that... I remember, you bet the Bears against the Packers, and you were getting five or given six or something. It was that simple. But
and of course, the other thing that blew it up was Well, I'll use the old term, the rotisserie leagues. You remember that reference?
Yeah.
So fantasy. They're now fantasy leagues, but the fantasy stuff. When fantasy football and fantasy baseball caught on, a number of states regulated those as gambling because that's effectively what they were when money started getting into it. But once those things took off,
NFL, are big dough.
Yeah, the NFL realized that this was a dramatic spur to viewership and interest in the game, and they jumped into it with both feet. So that, this ball has been rolling for 50 years.
Well, the
way it manifests in media now is really interesting because, for instance, if you watch the local coverage of, say, the Chicago Bulls on the Chicago Sports Network, they'll cut to the studio in game, and they'll say, "Well, the over under for the fourth quarter is, I'll take the over." They're having those discussions in game, and is it only a matter of time before we have the people in the broadcast booth doing that?
Well, if you listen to some of the more popular non-network affiliated programs like Bill Simmons, Bill Simmons' podcast, and I like the guy. I think he's very talented. But his sports podcast is a nonstop gambling assessment of bets that they're taking during the game on performance by individual players, on over-unders on certain things. It eventually, I assume it's going to get to the point where you will have a gambling channel that runs 24/7.
I think there is one. I think there is one in Vegas, actually, though.
It wouldn't surprise me a bit, and you just dial into that and pick your or a gambling network, and you just pick your program as to what game's going on, and on the screen in front of you can see five or six different graphs showing point spread, various bets what you can make, who's up, who's down,
but everybody knows, I think everybody knows, all the coaches probably know the spread for the game. But what would the communication be to how many rebounds Kevin's going to get in the third quarter? How the hell do you get that to Kevin?
Well, unless they're taking the phones away from these guys, and I don't, I know certain NFL clubs have banned phones on the sidelines, and that may now be a league ban. But I suspect there are people who are carrying phones onto the sidelines, and you can communicate with them that way. You can put people in the stands that they look for, who hold up hand signals or whatever. There are any number of ways you can communicate with them.
Well, here's just give me a second. I'll read you here's the Illinois law. Among the bets that have been banned are first plays, replay results, whether a kicker will miss a field goal or extra point, or whether a quarterback's first pass will game will be incomplete. Outside of gameplay, bets have always been banned on they would fall under the umbrella of fan safety, player misconduct, penalties, officiating assignments, and roster personnel decisions. The rule is designed to ban anything that could be viewed as 100% determinable by one person in one play. Predetermined choices and actions within the control of individual players, coaches, and league officials are susceptible to abuse and manipulation. So that's what they're going after. In Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you can see how that gets limited.
But so rebounds now, per quarter is, well, it's somewhat determinable. I guess if you knew your over-under was 3 and you had 2, you wouldn't go in for one, but what if one right. bounces off your head? You let it bounce off your head or what?
Yeah. Well, or
and then you curse your or bounce off your hands, and you just look at your hands and curse it, and trot down the court.
You gotta say me bad too.
Yeah, I mean, my bad.
I mean, what's fascinating to me is the mentality that's going to bet on something like that.
But in terms of numbers, and I know you don't like when I drive you down this road, but this is, I've said this 100 times. This is the fifth savior in my life of gambling, of everything that's wrong with me and the people around me. The first one was the lottery, which didn't, I guess we're making money on that. Then it became off-track betting. Then it became casinos, or with water, you know, the casino boats. Then it was land-based casinos. Now it's gambling in the bars that they take the stuff away from the casinos. And now it's sports betting. I mean, how far? You could probably take a line and say, no matter what you do, you're only going to get. I actually saw this study once where no matter what you do, there's certain people that like to gamble, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, are going to gamble 15-20% of their nut. And if they're not going to the horse track, they're going to the casino. If they're not going to go to the casino, they're going to the saloon with the game in there, or they're going to bet on football. I mean, what do they expect to get? 80% of people's income in here? I mean, what's the goal here? It just seems like you're shoving it around to me.
But isn't that really the goal? Is just to say it's happening anyway. The state wants its cut.
Well, that for sure is it, because the stuff in the bars, those video machines, the state's the casino. It's not like they ran it into the horseshoe in Joliet.
So anything else that they tell you about the motivation behind it is just bullshit.
Well, but what's their cut on sports gambling? I mean, this I don't get their cut on this. What's their cut?
Well, I'm sure there is a licensing fee, you know, that they have to do some kind of registration fee, licensing fee, that's a recurring fee. I have no doubt about that.
Well,
yeah, and then it's the same, it's the same motivation and actually the same mentality as the legalization of drugs. You know, the idea that we're going to legalize, people are doing it anyway, so we're going to legalize it so that we can monitor it, tax it, regulate it. Here in Colorado, that has not worked one iota. We still have a burgeoning illegal drug trade here.
Well, because the prices are cheaper.
No, the prices aren't cheaper. The black market stuff is cheaper.
Yeah.
Because the state regulated product is expensive, and it's the same issue with NIL, the same kind of. Economic process. The minute the colleges came in and said, okay, we're going to regulate NIL and we're going to cap it so that we even the playing field here and we don't get out of control. The minute that happened, I said, okay, so now we're back to envelopes of money under the table at the Waffle House.
Well, how can they do that legally?
Speaking of the SEC.
How can they do that legally?
What, cap the NIL?
Yeah, I mean, the Supreme Court just said,
the NCAA can pretty much pass any rule it wants because it's a voluntary organization. So you either belong to the organization and abide by the rules or you don't.
I mean, part of the way they can do it, Tom, is that they settled a lawsuit and agreed to do it that way. That's one way, by the way, of skirting the antitrust concerns. And in fact, if you look at the negotiations on that House settlement, which was the NIL case that has now dominated the big five conferences in terms of how they manage their money. If you look at the settlement negotiations in that case, probably 40% of the time was spent trying to figure out how to make sure that they could negotiate something that would skirt the antitrust laws, but not draw the wrath of DOJ.
Well, I'm talking about who knows what the intent was, the original apparent intent of the Supreme Court that the schools don't own your name, image, and likeness. I'm pretty convinced, and you guys convince me, that you can have some kind of a settlement of what Indiana and Notre Dame can pay players, but there's no way, I don't think, legally, that you can tell Hannah Hidalgo that she can't sign a contract with Red Bull.
And nobody is trying to do that.
Okay, so you're not evening the playing field, really. You're evening the playing field for one piece of it.
Yes.
Basically, it's the salary.
Okay, fair enough. I'm kind of splitting here. I'm saying you're not stopping somebody who's a terrific-looking guy or girl or whoever being a spokesperson for State Farm and getting paid $5 million for that. They're not even trying to stop that. I don't think they can they?
Well, so this gets to an interesting question. My understanding of House is that those deals for $5 million for being a spokesman for State Farm, those deals are subject to scrutiny by the NIL oversight committee that lawsuit established, and that money would count against the cap. Kevin, am I wrong on that?
I don't know that.
I don't know. I don't know how you could do that.
Well, you do it.
But it's against the original intent of the rule, right?
You do it. I mean, the response is we're not cutting off the player. The player can get that money. We're just going to penalize the school if it comes in.
Wow. So if the two good-looking ladies from the Georgia school do modeling in the summertime, that accounts against other people at the school?
It can.
Boy,
that's my understanding of the settlement. Yeah, and it's also, Tom, it's also subject to scrutiny. I mean, somebody's going to, if that deal gets announced, this is why I said we're back to envelopes of money under the table.
Well, it seems like we're right back where we started from, just at a higher level.
Exactly.
Yeah, because the scrutiny part is what was the school's role in arranging it?
And is it a legitimate function? There's a huge
how do I get on a scrutiny team?
Bureaucracy being dumped over college athletics as a result of letting lawyers make these decisions.
Well, we always have to have a bureaucracy, right?
Yeah, and the minute, to go back to your basic economic principles that I can still remember some of from high school, the minute you limit something, in this case NIL cash, or in other cases dope or gambling opportunity, the minute you limit it, you immediately create a black market for it.
Well, if they're starting out the kids in high school, now one of our Notre Dame friends, Dave Murphy, I still want to get him on the show one day, but he doesn't want to get up there early in California. He claims that a lot of the high school kids out in California from the big schools are getting paid. Now, my buddy here, he's a high mucky muck on the board of Mount Carmel. He might be the chairman, I'm not sure.
So when he says they're getting paid for deal, NIL, like the
yes,
deals?
Yes.
They're doing advertisements.
Or they're paying them. Nike's already signing a kid up when he gets a choice to go to any of the Nike schools or something like that.
Okay.
Or he gets Nike, he wears Nike equipment.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, but now my friend says that Mount Carmel is doing the best they can to make sure that kids here aren't getting paid. Now, I don't know how they're doing that, but I don't know if Mount Carmel takes money from Nike or Adidas or something. I have no idea about college or high school sports. But, I mean, how are you going to stop Nike from paying Kevin's son a bunch of dough and say, here's your five colleges, they're all Nike schools, pick one? I mean, he's working for Nike.
I don't think you're going to be able to do that. At least not without some kind of huge regulatory scheme in place that would have to pass constitutional muster. So I don't know.
Yeah, but
regulating high school would be the next step, because this stuff creeps down, and we are apparently so crazy for sports content that we're publicizing the exploits of high school athletes to the extent that these payments become an option.
Well, you know, it's you could. I wish I could do this. I had the time, or the, you know, well, this could be a job for Russell because he has the people. Actually, maybe Larissa could go to Purdue. Anyway, I think if you went back and looked at these companies that are doing this, the Nike and the Adidas and the Under Armour, I'm going to say their stocks have performed horribly in the last 20 years as they've been doing this. I don't know that it's worth it to them.
Dealing with the athletes?
The whole mess of, you know, sponsoring Notre Dame, paying Hartman $1 million. I'm gonna, at the end of the day, if they're all going, what are we doing? I don't know. When a high school kid, you can put my name on a pair of shoes. I'm not in high school. Who the hell's going to know who I am and who's going to buy a shoe because my name's on it?
Well, I think the part you're missing in there, Tom, is the amount of social media marketing that they do and what impact that has. Now, I haven't studied that to know whether that's effective or not, but because we don't see a commercial for what Jeremiah Love wears or something like that, doesn't mean it doesn't show up elsewhere.
Oh, no, I'm with you. Yeah.
If you look at Instagram, I mean, I'm not on Instagram, but it pops up every now and then on either my Facebook or Twitter feeds. If you look at Instagram, it's lousy with this kind of stuff.
Well, I'm with you. I'm just saying, if you imagine the three of us being on a board, oh God, the chairman would not like that. But if we're sitting on the Under Armour board, and we see that we gave, you know, Hartman $1 million, another guy $2 million, somebody else $3 million, and in Notre Dame, God knows what, and our other Under Armour schools, somebody's going to say, hey, guys, was it worth it? What did we get for all? I mean, I know once you get into that flow, it's hard to stop when other people are doing it. You're sort of competing with other places, but at the end of the day, is it worth it?
Well, instead, you're going to be sitting on the board saying, why did we lose our Under Armour contract with one school to Adidas?
I get that part, but I'm saying you also have to say it's sort of like football. The bidding is going out for football and baseball again. Oh my God, ESPN's going to bid, you know, $5 trillion. We better do six. Okay, well that's one argument. The other argument is how are we going to get our six back?
Well, I would love to. I mean, there's got to be a. A really well developed history on this. I mean, starting with
Converse. I'm saying the stocks have not gone up. They've underperformed virtually every other stock since they've been doing this stuff. I don't know if that's a reason.
That could. I mean, starting with Converse, going back to what's his face, Chuck Taylor, right?
Taylor, yeah.
You ought to have a pretty well defined stock performance over the 70, 80 years on this stuff. With the shoes or other products and whether the endorsements make a difference. Somebody thinks they do.
Well, I think you'd be suicidal all of a sudden to stop tomorrow, but to take a look and say, where are we over the top? You know,
before we lose the sports thread, I want to reference one weird thing that popped up in my NFL feed. So, and this relates to CTE. I would just jump real quick over in Europe, specifically in Ireland, I believe the rugby union is being sued by players over concussions and CTE. And this case, because they didn't settle it, this case is running in the direction that those NFL cases would have run had they not reached a settlement. And specifically, it's blowing up over data and medical records and the inquiries into the players' previous injuries and medical histories that drive, you know, an assessment of whether you came into the league with a brain injury that was just pushed a little bit by your rugby playing, or whether playing rugby was the prime cause. And this was the issue that I think would have potentially doomed the concussion litigation had it gone to trial. And although not, you know, there's always the risk that a jury would say, yeah, we don't care what the data is. We feel sorry for the football players.
Well, Lou, wasn't that the thing here? Nobody, the pros blamed it on the colleges, and the colleges blamed it on high school.
Yeah, this is exactly what's happening. Yeah. And so these cases, this huge class action case is breaking down in Ireland, because the rugby union and the clubs have gone back and said, fine, we want the medical histories of, and by medical histories, we mean going back to like elementary school, of the guys that you're designating as the lead plaintiffs, because we want to see what their head injuries looked like growing up. Did they have a major incident sometime when they were like 10 or 12? Because we know that all of that stuff is cumulative, and that these effects wouldn't necessarily manifest themselves until these guys get into adulthood. And the cases are breaking down because they can't, first of all, produce those medical records. And second of all, there probably aren't any. Well, that's the point. And that's what the NFL was going to be running into. Because if you've been playing football since you were 8 years old, you know, you probably had a couple of head injuries. And okay, great. Did you have when you were 7 or 10 or 12? Because a concussion at 12 is a lot more serious than a concussion at 17, because your brain is still developing.
Did you ever see, maybe not
in my case, but you know, in most cases.
Did you ever see the what those guys wear if they had a concussion, the thing they put on their head?
The rugby players?
Yeah.
I know that their headgear is pretty limited.
They wear like a, it looks like the top of a, like a Spider-Man outfit.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got to be a quarter inch thick, maybe, of like some little padding, like cotton padding or something. I don't know what that does to anybody.
Well, again, in rugby, you're not supposed to lead with your head like you were taught in football for years.
You know what they did in grammar school here? If a kid had a concussion, he wanted to come back and play? On the outside of the helmet, down like in the middle of the helmet, they put a stripe of like a, maybe a quarter inch pad on the outside of the helmet. And that was supposed to help you out. Can you imagine?
I mean, something's better than nothing. But anyway, I point to this case because we talked about this when the concussion lawsuits first started, and when the settlement came out, I remember Tom railing against it, saying it was so unfair. And I said that the proof problems that the players have on this thing are manifest and legion, and it's going to be very difficult for them to get past what's called summary judgment because of the causation links are so complex and interlocked, and this is what's happening. You're seeing this play out in this rugby case, and I just wanted to.
There's got to be some way where, if you've had 7 of them while you're on the Bears, 7's probably enough to put you over the edge. You would think.
Oh, I would think so.
Yeah, I got to talk about a dumb.
Anyway, dumb
question. How do you wander down this? How is it that everybody's zeroing in on this concussion with, you know, manly men playing football? I've read stuff that the biggest concussion causer right now is young girls' soccer.
Yep, hitting the ball.
So how is it that your soccer moms think that's fine and playing football they think is horrible?
Because the mainstream press went after the NFL for a while.
So what's going to happen to all these girls when
the NFL's putting, you know, anti-racism stuff on the backs of their jerseys and in the end zones, the mainstream press is leaving them alone.
Oh God. Well, but I mean, what's going to happen to all does this happen to women like it does to men? I mean, it's a really dumb question, but are there ladies that have this problem?
That have CTE?
Yeah.
I have not read anything recently on this, but yes, I think the answer to that question is yes. Cumulative concussions, even small ones, or cumulative blows to the head, even small ones like in soccer, are problematic. And I have a client whose daughter was given a, you know, put in a concussion protocol. She's a field hockey player and was put in a concussion protocol for precisely that reason.
But men's soccer doesn't seem to have an issue, does it?
Oh yeah, it does.
Oh, it does. Okay.
And it's. I mean, it's not getting much publicity, but there are. I've seen medical studies on cumulative heading the ball impacts in men's soccer, with how this, how this translates into later brain damage.
Hey, you guys
probably
know, you guys
isn't getting that much publicity because soccer in general doesn't get much publicity until a World Cup time or something like that.
Hey, guess how I finished off my, we're still going to talk about it, I guess, but I finished off our Veterans 10-Day. And by the way, Lou, you were...
Yeah, and I've got something I want to add to that, so let's not get away from that too far, but let's finish this topic.
Well, I went to a veteran's funeral on Wednesday. How can you ever have a dry eye in those things? I mean, this gentleman was a Vietnam Bronze Star kind of guy. He was there quite a while, and you know, in the jungles doing the real fighting, whatever that means. And he talked about a horrible story, a good story and a horrible story. Get a load of this, guys. He and his wife met in second grade and walked to school together. They broke up for a month in high school, and that was it. They were together their entire life. And how many stories are there like that? I mean,
not very many.
And he had some, you know, some horrible disease that she took care of him for a couple of years, and finally he passes. And like a week later, she gets diagnosed with cancer and lasts about 2 months. I mean, really, she's Audrey's cousin, but a nice couple. And anyway, we went out to the thing, and the people were Army guys. A couple of Army guys were there. Boy, talk about great shape. This young white guy, young black guy, and they're doing the flag ceremony. I mean, how do you keep a dry eye when those guys are doing that to the flag? They are so intent on doing it perfectly because they actually give a crap about the person they never even met just because he was a fellow soldier. I mean, it is so impressive. And but they must have had 10 people there, and there couldn't have been 12 people at the funeral. And the old guys come from the Wilmington, Illinois VFW, and they shoot off the guns, and
yeah, I was gonna say they did the rifle.
Oh, they did. They take off, and they had their guy doing calling them out, and I'm grateful. And then they give you the letter signed by Trump and the whole bit, and it's it is so damn impressive, and it's you just kind of lose it how much those guys. I don't care where you were, I mean, Hal talks about being in the bowels of a ship for 43 degrees. It was 140 degrees. There's no easy thing in the military unless you're McHale or something, in a TV show. I mean, you're doing stuff other people want you to do for 3 years, and none of it's easy. And you're hanging around with people you probably don't even like. Even if you don't get shot, it's a chunk of your life. And a lot of people I don't think the appreciation is quite where it ought to be. Just saying.
Well, it's a lot better than it was.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a cadet at the academy and I was working in Washington D.C. one summer, we were instructed not to wear our uniforms. I mean, I went through. I was part of the military that I came in at the tail end of Vietnam. I was on active duty at the tail end of Vietnam, I saw that whole decade of the 70s where our military people were basically reviled.
Yeah.
They got called baby killers all the
yep.
time.
And our all volunteer force, when we transitioned to the all volunteer force, our all volunteer force was, made up of guys that not all of them, but had a substantial number of people that were there because they couldn't do anything else. You know, the old Bob Dylan song, Join the Army if you fail.
Yeah,
I mean, this kind of thing was probably the nadir of our.
Well, you had the Me Lie thing in people's minds and.
it was an unpopular war.
Yeah.
And the unpopularity of the war, the pointlessness of it, was driven home by the fact that we were drafting people, and the power elites were able to keep their kids out of it until we lifted the exemptions. And I still think that's what ultimately ended Vietnam was lifting the exemptions, and suddenly the sons of congressmen and the sons of the people who donated to the congressmen were suddenly eligible to be drafted, and they did not want to go.
Well, that was my year. They were eligible to be drafted because I was. When you lost your exemption, I had a high number, so I guess I lucked out. A couple of my buddies didn't. You were drafted, but you did not go to NAM. One guy drove trucks in Europe, and another guy was a tank mechanic in Alaska. If that year that they got rid of the exemptions, you if you got drafted, you didn't go to NAM.
Yeah, well, and
there was a deal there.
And the way I've always looked at it, Tom, from my perspective was, you know, some guys I got shot at. I was one of the few Cold War. I was a Cold Warrior. I came in at the end of Vietnam. I was commissioned, and I served in through the, you know, an active duty through the into the 1990s, and then in the reserves. There was very little combat until Iraq won, and I got shot at once. And that was highly unusual for somebody in principal.
That had to be an eye opener.
And so I always looked at it from the perspective of if you signed up, if you volunteered, you were signing what I call the unlimited liability clause on your life, basically, which was you're basically committing to be thrown into the maelstrom if it happens. And again, we don't talk about this, and a lot of you don't remember it, but in the early 1980s, from the late 1970s into about 85, 86, most of us who were on active at that time were fully prepared for the Soviets to come across the border in NATO.
Oh yeah.
And go after NATO. We were perceived as weak. We were perceived as badly trained. Our equipment was old, and we were exhausted from fighting in Vietnam. And if the Russians were going to do something, if the Soviets were going to do something, they were armed to the teeth. That we had watched a defense expansion that had started in the early 70s with them. And watch them roll out the nukes, and watch them roll out the tanks and the aircraft. This huge numerical superiority, which we did not have the kind of smart weapons capability to defeat at that point, and we were prepped. It was going to be a mess. And I just said, okay, well, we've all signed up for this, and we may not, you know, our careers may be spent doing, you know, non-combat stuff. But we've all signed up for this clause, and I lost enough of my friends. By the time I was 25, 26, I had 21 or 22 friends that had died in aircraft accidents.
Really?
You know, by that point, yeah. I mean,
didn't more people die in World War II in training accidents than actually shot down?
I don't.
Pretty
think
close.
That, no. I don't. It may have been close to that, but I don't. I mean, the losses of just 8th Air Force in Europe were unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, the point is, you know, the guys that signed up for this, that volunteered for it, or that stayed with it after their initial draft, draft number came up, they basically said, okay, we're there. If you need us, we're here. And if you do that, I mean, that pretty much establishes, as far as I'm concerned, that you're part of the band of brothers,
you know,
or sisters.
You sound like I was watching, for whatever reason, last week I was watching some game and couldn't fall asleep, so I was watching 12 O'Clock High, way back in the 50s show, and this kid says to him, "How with all these people, all these shells laying around you and people dying, how can you make these decisions the way you're doing?" And Gallagher says, "I've already expected to die today. I'm going to do the best I can for everybody until that moment happens, or maybe I'll get out of it."
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain fatalism that you, especially if you're in the, you know, the combat arms where you're seeing this stuff happen every day. There's a certain fatalism, and I mean, every time I took off on one of my flights, and I was doing, you know, long range reconnaissance flights around various unpleasant places. Every time we took off, we briefed. Okay, if somebody comes up to shoot at us, this is what's going to happen, and you just say, okay, every day, we were told if the bad guys want to make a political statement, the easiest way for them to do it is to shoot down one of our reconnaissance aircraft, you know, and that's, they've done it before and they'll do it again, and you know, you guys are going to be the tip of the spear.
What did Wayne say yesterday? Was it grandfather or great uncle or somebody got killed in World War I 2 days after the armistice because the word hadn't gotten to him yet?
Yep.
Well, that's what a kick in the behind that is.
Yeah. Well, I always go back to Andrew Jackson. The Battle of New Orleans was fought, 3 weeks after they signed the peace treaty in Paris?
Oh, God.
So anyway, the point is, and I don't want to make too much of this, but the point is that because we have an all-volunteer force now, we've insulated these guys to a certain extent from the rest of our culture, and it's pretty funny.
Well, you have in some states, not pushing back at all, you're correct, but some states it's still a little different. I mean, every small town in Ohio has some group, their Jeep mechanics or their something, that they were all over with Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yes, but in the professional ranks, I mean, and this, yep. By the way, this is something that's starting to change. I am absolutely thrilled that we have a vice president who was a grunt in the Marines, who had trained at that level, and we lost track of a lot of that for a while, and I'm gratified to see that we're getting people with that kind of experience coming back into Congress and whatever. Now, some of them are idiots, like this Crow guy who was part of that group that and Kelly, who are Trump deranged. But I'm gratified to see that kind of experience coming forward, because there's an appreciation. If you've been in that role, there's an appreciation for what it means to put people in harm's way.
Well, there was a slight interview.
The thing is somebody like Wesley Hunt, who was a chopper pilot. Same kind of experience being brought in.
Well, if you notice, and with the various people we had talking about this, there was and with all the interesting stuff in there, I've already noticed, but the guys like Wayne and one of my buddies we used to work with us, Jim Duran, he was, I said, when you got mustered out, he goes, where did they kick you out? He goes, I was in Europe. They brought me back to Fort Dix and see ya. I said, well, did they at least give you a plane ticket? He goes, no, I don't think so. But Jim had, his parents were still together. His bedroom was still there. He had a place he'd go for a while. I mean, Wayne said they just dumped him off somewhere. They said, well, where's your address? He goes, the address is no good because their parents moved. But now, when Hal got out, which had to be 20 years later, he said they had people to catch on unemployment.
There's a whole transition. Yeah, there's a whole transition program in place.
Yeah, which is a huge improvement over see ya.
Oh, yeah.
Look, before we get off here, because we're coming up on Carl's time, I want to tell you a story of a conversation I had with a Marine who served in the Middle East. She was non-combat, and I was telling her about what we've done over the last couple of weeks on the show, and said I got to get you some, get you pointed at some of the interviews because I think you'll find them interesting. Her big anxiety when she got out was the compulsion to check the casualty lists to see if anybody she knew, anybody who served with her, was on the casualty list. And
I think we'd do that too, wouldn't we?
Yeah, but the compulsion to check, and at the same time, the dread of finding somebody, and that difficulty, and some of the anxiety stuff persists to this day. It's just another dimension for the and maybe a sort of a survivor's guilt, but another dimension for the things that we've been discussing over the last couple of weeks about how that trend, just because you're out doesn't mean you're home free.
No, every time when I was on active duty, every time an airplane went down, I looked for the names.
How often does that happen, Lou?
That you wouldn't. Now that it comes up, I can't imagine that you wouldn't.
Yeah,
hadn't thought of it that way.
Yep.
Well, how you're saying a lot of people over the years. Does this happen every week, every month? You hear
what?
Somebody in a training accident or some plane going down. I mean, my.
Well, as I said, I was. And I knew about this because I write my class, my Air Force Academy classes, quarterly alumni column. But I, as I said, by the time I was 25, I was out of the academy 3-4 years. I had 20 some odd of my classmates killed in training accidents. And it was people made fun of George Bush because he was a National Guard guy. And I kept telling everybody that would listen, you don't get it. He was flying an old fighter that was so dangerous to train in and fly in. I mean, it literally was a widowmaker. And every time he got out there and stepped to the jet, there was a significant risk of his having something terrible going on in while he was flying and having to either bail out or ride it in. And that, you know, unless you've had people that you knew fairly well killed at a young age, you lose track of just how dangerous military aviation used to be. It's not quite as dangerous now, but it still is. I mean, helicopters go down and, you know, whatever, but the training is dangerous and people get killed doing it.
Okay, what particular plane was it? It looked like an F-4, was it? I saw one picture.
The F-102, the Delta Dagger.
Okay, I don't
know. And I mean, it was a 50-0 plane, and it was a big Delta wing jet, and it was an unforgiving aircraft to fly.
Yeah, anybody who's flown a jet, I got to believe, is not some weenie. I mean, the idea was that he wanted the reserve unit versus something else, but still, it wasn't like he did nothing.
He was a guard guy. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, he was a fighter pilot. The flying fighters is inherently dangerous stuff. You're basically putting an aircraft into a position where you can't recover it. In some cases, the aircraft will kill you because some thing goes wrong on the aircraft, like those UPS, that horrible yeah. UPS crash, and the video and the photographs that came out of that thing, or you know, I had one classmate who was killed because he pulled too many G's and he blacked out. They weren't really aware of something called, it was called G-lock, G-induced loss of consciousness. And he pulled too many G's, blacked out on the aircraft, and it entered a unrecoverable attitude, and he was out. You know, plane went in.
We had to get a load of this, talk about wacky people. When we first started the firm, we had this client came to one of our seminars, and the guy used to go to air shows, and he flew a MiG, believe it or not. And he bought this MiG, and he'd go to air shows, and that was his shtick. So one day the phone rings, and I pick it up, and I just came from the trading floor, and Tom's Dan there. Well, no, he just went to the men's room or whatever. And he goes, well, I've had a really bad day. I said, well, hope it's nothing we did. I don't know, nothing you guys did, but I crashed my plane. Okay. But he's telling me, over a cocktail, he goes, you know, I couldn't find a Russian MiG, so I had to buy a Chinese MiG. And I go, okay, I'm not knowing what the difference was. Well, you know what the difference is. I said, well, no, I don't. He says, the window is smaller, because Chinese people are smaller. He goes, so if I ejected, I would essentially tear my shoulders off. I can't use the eject because it's not big enough. And I go, you're flying something like that where you can't eject. Well, yeah. Odd people in this world. So he puts a new engine in the thing. He goes, there's only so much you can figure out racing up and down the runway, right? You got to take it up in the air. He goes, but you go when you try it out, you go straight up. And I said, okay, now why do you do that? He says, well, because if you conk out, you don't want to be 5 miles from the airport and land on somebody's house. You want to be over the airport so you can have a chance to get yourself back down. I said, okay. He goes, well, the thing bursts into flames a little bit, so I dead stick it down. I land. I get out of the thing. And the fire guys come out there and they're spraying foam on it. I'm screaming, don't put foam on it. I can replace the engine. But evidently the foam keeps the heat in, and the whole fuselage melts or something bizarre like that. So he lost his plane, but at least he didn't lose his shoulders.
Hey, I'm going to leave you with this. The old pilot's comment is, there's nothing more useful than the sky above, or less useful. There's nothing less useful than the sky above you.
I guess you're probably right. But I don't know if this guy's still alive or what, but He was certifiable. There's no doubt about that. But he was a good client.
All right,
Lou.
Pleasure.
Hey, Noah, we're gonna get you on Sneaky on next week because Thanksgiving's Thursday, so we need at least a Lou fix for a little bit.
See what we can do maybe on Friday.
Yeah. Okay. S&P futures up 24. Kevin, who do you like tomorrow?
Who do I like for what?
Well, the Irish have to. Are they ever gonna move forward from this? nine spot last night. Some goofball.
Yeah, there's teams above them that have to play.
Well, there's some goofball at our table alone.
There's things like Oklahoma can take a loss. There's still 2 weeks of football left.
Well, one guy was saying, why are they ahead of Miami? When Miami beat them, I go, Miami beat them on an amazing last second catch, and they've gotten better, and Miami's gotten worse. That's why they're ranked higher. Is that a fair statement?
Well, it is, but yeah, that argument's always going to persist. I mean, that goes back to we all remember 1993 when Notre Dame beat Florida State, and Florida State gave the pollsters Bobby Bowden a Lifetime Achievement Award because the Irish lost the game the week after that.
Yeah.
And so both teams had the same record, and Florida State got to be the champs. You know, anything that requires, that involves people's opinions for deciding, you know, in this case, until the playoffs start, and then it gets decided on the field. But anything that's going to decide who's in the field is opinions, and, you know, opinions are going to be weird sometimes.
Well, you want the seventh spot, right? Because you don't want to play Ohio State the second game, assuming you win the first one.
Yeah, if you got to play them sooner or later, you might as well just play them. Look, as far as Notre Dame goes, my opinion of them, their defense has gotten systematically better over the course of the season. The offense is explosive. They're capable of beating anybody, so just, you know, just get in the field and get your opportunity to play. After that, who cares? From their standpoint, don't care.
Well, that's all
just
right.
Play ball.
What time is it tomorrow? It's 2:30, right, or something?
Yeah, I think it's, well, 3:30 Eastern, yeah, but 2:30. And then the next week they're playing Stanford at like 10:30 at night Eastern time.
Yeah. All right. SP Futures up 18, NASDAQ Futures up 31. What do you say we go right to Carl, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about today? By the way, this isn't really Labor Day, but it sort of is because it came out the other day. And maybe Carl can make some heads or tails, because I had all kinds of problems with this A1 thing. Plus, we just had a big turnaround here this morning, Carl. And by the way, we need to talk about the turnaround yesterday. What's going on in Bitcoin? Where do you want to start?
Oh, I don't know. Where would you like to start? Why don't we start with the labor report?
Yeah, start with the labor report.
You know, because that was the oldest thing, right, that was, yep, you know, was held up. Okay, so the big problem in the labor report is that everybody was assuming that it was going to support substantial weakness being demonstrated in the labor market, and therefore here comes the Fed, right? I mean, that was the assumption, was that and by the way, that the mantra that I heard from a number of people is that, well, obviously Trump doesn't want this data out because, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Okay. But the data was all collected prior to the shutdown. So it was a matter of, because, you know, third week of the month is the sample week, all right? So the
just to be clear, these are the September numbers, not the Octobers.
Correct. So,
and we're now, you know, November, mid.
Well,
end,
yeah, yeah. But the shutdown, you know, started October 1st, right? At the, you know, midnight on September 30th. All right. So the data was in the system, and was to be crunched over the next few days, because the cutoff is the 1st, right? So, all right, it's all there. Now, it has to be analyzed and the report put together, whatever have you. Fine.
It has to be scrubbed. It has to go by the Oval Office now.
Yeah, well, you know, and of course, there are people that have it in advance. And incidentally, the executive does have it in advance. The president has it before it's released. All right? That's not a new Trump thing.
No, that's always been like that.
That's always been true. Okay, now, of course, they're sworn to secrecy, except for, you know, their friends at Goldman.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there you go. But the thing is that, you know, so it comes out, I look at it, and you got two immediate problems with the data set that, you know, that pops up with this, and it's that this terrible labor market is not demonstrated by the report.
Well, the household numbers look spectacular.
Well, the
at least the one I'm looking at.
Well, the household number is plus 600,000. Okay.
Well, the adjusted is up 3.
I
yeah. I'm saying, but the The amount of people working went up a tenth. The amount of people unemployed went up a little bit, but the amount of people, I don't know what they do, came way down. So I'm going to say these are really good.
And NILF, again, unadjusted, was plus 43, which is, I mean, that's an unch for all intents and purposes, right, when you're at 103 million. So, but here's the thing. Your employment population ratio ticked up two. Okay, now that's actually, because each of those ticks is 600,000 people.
Well, this one's got it one, 59.6 to 59.7.
Well, I'm 59, unadjusted, 59.6 to 59.8.
Okay.
Okay.
That's better.
It is. However, the bad news is that the population adjusted number actually deteriorated from -3.205 to -3.298. Now, that's a 12-month rolling number. Okay. And again, Christmas comes at the same time every year, which is why, you know, I use the 12-month rolling number, because, duh. Now, the problem with this is, and I keep hammering on people on my forum and on my blog
I read it.
Well, I keep hammering on people. Look, the adjustment for the non-institutional working-age population, which is a non-adjusted number, that adjustment is made in the January report every year. And last year, it showed an enormous increase that absolutely had, it only had one logical explanation, and that was the crazy number of people that the Biden administration had paroled into the country in the last 12 months that they were in office. All right, there was no other reasonable explanation for this, because we certainly did not all of a sudden have a bunch of people 16 years earlier that decided to screw and make children that we didn't know about, and then magically on their 16th birthday they show up in this report. Okay, that didn't happen. So there's only one rational explanation for that dislocation that was in the data. Now, we now have the very same executive, except, oh, there's a different guy sitting in the left seat, right? And, you know, his cabinet people and his FBI and his DOJ and his Homeland Security and, you know, Customs, whatever, who have said, we've thrown something like 3 million people out of the country, the majority of whom left voluntarily, however, the other 500,000 left involuntarily. Okay. All right.
I wouldn't believe any number that these guys give you.
Well, the first week of February, when we get the January number, we're going to find out if he's lying.
Well, we're going to find out these numbers. Last year, you were stunned at the number. We also have had years where there's like been no increase in population, and we know there is. So I mean,
No. We haven't had a no increase. What we've had is where the estimate there was no dislocation between them. In other words, the 12-month run rate that was presumed and in there holds up, and there isn't any significant delta on in that January number. In other words, it just goes up or down by whatever, you know. Well, it's always been going up, but it goes up by you know, approximately what it was. Now in the January 24 number was actually revised down about 400,000, which is, I mean, you know, that's like over 12 months. That's you know, that's a statistic unch, right? I mean, nobody's perfect, but the ACS runs every month out of the year, right? Some number of people get that huge long form census thing, and that's where this reset comes from every January.
I don't think anybody who just came across the border in the last 3 years ever fills that thing out.
Well, some people probably do, but you know, here's the thing is that, you know, the year before that, 2023, the January number was plus 1.1 million roughly. Okay, so I mean, this is that there is an error in this statistical process is you know, across 330 million Americans is to be expected.
You know, but the numbers I'm looking at here are, I'm going back year after year. It does seem a little odd to me that if you look at every year, it looks like about a million people a year.
Maybe, well, it's actually been... It's
a little more than that.
It's actually about two on a statistical basis that get added. And that if I'm talking about long-term averages here, okay, not, you know, not.
Yeah, I'm going back to, like, what I'm saying is the idea that this every all year it's like next to nothing sometimes, and all of a sudden you get this big thing in January, and some years you don't. It almost depends on how accurate it is during the year.
Well, of course, I mean, yeah, duh.
I mean, we had this big number come up in January, and up to April, then we added like almost nobody.
Well, right? No, that's not true. I'm just sitting here looking at this, and we're putting
from January to June, we only went up 900,000 people.
No, okay, yeah, and that's about 200,000 a month, which is that's about right. That's 2 million a year, Chief. I mean, it's right around a little over 2 million a year. That's the long term average, okay, and that is, I mean, you know, you have this screed coming out of people about the population curve, if you will, and the shape of it, and that, you know, the doom loop that is coming, right? Which, by, you know, 1.6 births per woman, which, by the way, is true, okay? The problem is you're not seeing, the reason you don't see that in here is because they haven't gotten to be 16 years old yet.
It's so scary, and we have so much other stuff to talk about, but the whole thing, this has become incredibly racial, like it's done in this country before. Did the same thing. I read the argument about the law regarding the Chinese after the railroads were done. Yeah. Oh man, they're going to take your jobs. They're costing you this. They're costing you that. All of a sudden, everybody couldn't wait to kick the Chinese people out. Well, now we can't wait to kick the Hispanics out because they're taking our jobs. And by the way, they're getting all the Social Security, even though they're not. And they're getting all the medical care, even though they're not. I mean, but now it's that's the mantra. So
okay, well, how about all the Somalis who have now been caught scamming stupid amounts of money out of public programs and out of
everybody else's stuff. If we want to talk about people scamming stuff out of public programs, we can talk about where can we go with that.
Yeah, well, the problem is that it doesn't matter where you look, all you find is a scam.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, this is one of the points I've been making for a very long time, is that the issue that you have with not throwing people in jail for breaking the law is that you set a example that then every group who can find some way to do this and can hide behind screaming racism
when challenged
will do it.
But it's not just there's a whole mindset in the scam world, that
of course.
No, but I guess I'm not, you could say this better than me if you knew what I was trying to say. When Matt Weber was our engineer, Matt also worked for an internet securities firm, and he got pretty good at it. I mean, he was more in the sales area, but he knew something. He's saying 85% of the money stolen is stolen like electronically, and yet 85% of your police force has no idea even what that is. It's I mean, if somebody knocks you on the head in the bar and grabs your wallet, the police will show up and maybe try and find the guy, or maybe won't, or at least they'll take the report. If you put your thing in the ATM machine and you pull it out and they stole $1,000 from your bank, they're going to say, hey, take that up with your bank. What's that got to do with me?
Right.
So a lot of what you're talking about is absolutely true, but we don't know this morning, right? And then some guy has a Bitcoin wallet, all right? Now, I don't know what, how can I say this without saying it? Sometimes the stupidity of the, what did George Carlin say? Think how dumb the average guy is, and half people are dumber than he is, or something like that. I honestly believe there's no such thing as a stupid human being. But here's a guy, he's got all this money in Bitcoin, right? So he gets this group and they go, send us your Bitcoin money and like we'll invest it in another place. Who are these people? They're not registered advisors like we are. They're not a brokerage firm.
Oh, I know.
So the guy ships 280 grand worth of Bitcoin to this other firm, checks his account the next day, and it's zero.
Good morning. Yeah.
The firm's gone. I mean, for God's sake, why don't you get somebody legit? It's so easy to check up on people. I mean,
Chief, no. Look, we live in it. We live in a world today where $3 trillion a year, my best estimate, $3 trillion a year is stolen in one industry alone in the United States.
Oh, I'm going to think you're probably low.
All of it in violation of laws that have been on the books for more than 100 years, and not a single criminal indictment issues.
It's
been 40, Chief, it's been 40 years since the Supreme Court confirmed that these laws apply. Not one, I can't find a single felony indictment. Not one.
Because you're hitting too close to home. So I'm saying white-collar crime is, new commercial, there's been like 40 iterations of Yellowstone.
Chief, am I supposed to be upset that somebody decides to take a shot at a presidential candidate or whatever else goes on, okay?
Yeah, we're supposed to be upset at all this.
Well, am I supposed to be mad about that? Oh, my God, we have to tone down the temperature. Da, da, da. And meanwhile, I get it up the back door every single day along with everyone else in the form of inflation and having my, all the money that I have, the money I've made by honest labor being stolen a dime at a time every single day for almost quite literally my entire adult life.
Kyle, it's a good thing for both of us that you're on the show because you're talking to somebody who knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, and most people don't.
Most people, I mean, I've given this.
Well, even better, a significant one person in five in our country today makes their living screwing you.
Well, that's. I know I beat this up, and people probably go, "God, I wish you'd shut up." You got to take this from the when sometimes some people on the show they go in a different way. Look at how much the $1 trillion or $3 trillion. You're absolutely correct, but nobody has they can't get their hands around that. But then the other side is people don't trace this. I'll tell you the world's simplest story. I've been wearing contact lenses since I was 16. Got playing sports with glasses on was horrible. Plus, the glasses in those days were nowhere near as good as the ones now. But you couldn't do crap. And the day I got my contact lenses, all of a sudden I'm way better at basketball, football, you name it, baseball for sure. And I couldn't wait to get them. There's always been soaking solution, wetting solution, that kind of thing.
Right.
And there was an outfit called Mr. Boston, and they were only sold through the eye guys. I don't know what story they had, but they were cheaper than the stuff in the store. The stuff in the store was Allergan or somebody else. And all of a sudden, one day, they were in the stores, and they were competing cheaper than the other guys. And then, of course, they got bought. And you can still see the name. Okay, Mr. Boston. I mean, they're probably the best seller. I'm going to say for the 50 years I've been wearing contact lenses, every time I bought one of these things, if the Sherman Act would have been pounced on these guys' head, I'll bet I paid a dollar and a half. Things are $10. I bet I paid a dollar more than I should have for 45 years. Now, everybody's going to say, Chief, you got to tell. What's the difference? Well, there isn't much difference. I still buy it, but people, there's no way unless you walk through a couple of these things how insidious this becomes.
Oh, no, I understand.
You do, but who works this way up? How many times there used to be, how many car manufacturers? Now there's way less. Lou sent out that thing about how many combinations there's been in the military business. Now when you go out for a plane, you're talking two people instead of four. Unless you dig everyone down to the gnat's ass. Like suppose, Trump loses the thing at the Supreme Court on tariffs, which I think he should. And I think he will because it is a tick.
I don't have a good over under read on that.
Okay, either way, say he loses, there's this big hue and cry about sending the money back. And I said, wait a minute,
how not going to happen.
I honestly hope it doesn't happen. Okay,
I don't think it will.
I don't think it will. But just ask yourself, how could it happen? I mean, say Carl went out and bought a new. I don't think you're a Ford guy. Say you bought a Ford. And there's $5,000 worth of tariff increases. I'm just picking a number out of the air.
Right.
And Ford says, you know what? We didn't raise our prices at all. Now, they might not have raised the manufacturing price. We could complicate this forever if we wanted to. But say Ford did eat them all, ate every dime that the tariff and didn't raise anything to you for a second. Well, then Ford deserves the $5,000 a car. But what if they passed it all on? Now, what are they going to do? Write a check to everybody's... I mean, I'd love to see that. How's that going to work out?
Not going to happen.
Or what if they passed half of it on? I mean, this is so complicated. It's going to take so many people. They're either going to do some half-ass thing and send everybody in the country a $500 check or something and say you're even when somebody didn't buy the Ford and you did and paid $5,000. Or they're going to I think it's a tax. I think it should go to Congress. You had no business doing it. But I don't want to see the money come back. Start over. Go to Congress if you want to. You know, whatever. Have them pass it like you should have. And if that's where we land, that's where we land. I don't have a problem with that. I don't like tariffs, but I don't have a problem with that. At least it went through the system properly. But this idea, how many people we have to hire to figure out who the hell is going to get what? Every time I went to Walmart, spent $10, they're going to send me 40 cents back? How's that going to work?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the issue, right? So, I mean, there you go. But I just, you know, here's the thing, Chief. I look at all this stuff that's going on, okay, as you know, as things are, you know, basically now, right, when it comes to this. And I can't get my arms around so much of this nonsense. All right? I mean, like, at all. All right?
Some people are stealing so much, Carl. It's scary.
You know what? I understand this. And I look at all of these things in the context of what's going on around, you know, around us today. And then you look at what just happened with NVIDIA and the, you know, and the rest of the tech market and the stock market generally and the Bitcoin stuff. Here's the thing that I think is amusing about the whole, you know, because Bitcoin's kind of leading this, right? The crypto thing is sort of.
Why didn't we?
Let me tell you what.
But you did this thing 3-4 weeks ago. You said, hey, there was a same word that Tom Lee used yesterday. There was a glitch in one of these exchanges in Ethereum, right? Why didn't we just short the bejesus out of these things?
Well, because you and I, and this is the thing, you and I and everybody else, okay, at the time, we've looked at this, and how many times have you tried that and gotten it up your back door?
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And so, you know, yeah, you tried it, and guess what, right? So, well, how many times would you like to pound yourself over the head? And the answer is, maybe not as many as, you know what I'm saying?
There's always kind of a trigger. In a 2009 fiasco, we had a client who had one of these off-balance sheet things at Bear Stearns.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of, he's got accounts all over the place, but he loves my brother, so he does a lot of stuff through us.
Right.
And he lost $1 million on one of these things.
Yeah.
And my brother goes, how did that work? I mean, how did Bear Stearns have something together and yet it wasn't really them? And we should have immediately said, there's a little puff of smoke. There's got to be a fire there.
Get the F away out of that.
And bought puts on all these people. Now, we would have had to wait a year.
Right.
Which is a problem.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like it would happen the next day. But somewhere along the line, all of a sudden it blew up. And there was a warning sign.
And you did have warning. Yes.
But if you'd have bought puts for the next month, you'd have eaten those. The next month, you'd have eaten those. And maybe, if you were of an ilk where you'd say, instead of buying 100 of them, I'll buy 10 a month, you'd have made a bunch of dough the last month.
Right.
But not...
This is the thing, is that, you know, this is what ends up happening. So here's one of the problems with this whole, you know, the whole NVIDIA and the AI and Bitcoin thing are inextricably linked through NVIDIA in particular, okay, although not only there, but NVIDIA in particular. And the reason is that for the last 5 years, it has been essentially impossible to buy a graphics card if you are a videographer, if you produce video content, and I do, okay, or you use these boards, or if you're a gamer, for that matter, and I'm not, okay, but there's an awful lot of people.
Oh,
you'd
be a great gamer.
Well, I don't know. I've never been any good at the you know, first-person shooter stuff, which is, you know, where all of this is, right? It's the high-resolution things.
I was okay at pinball. I wasn't Tommy, but I was okay.
Well, I have 5 pinball machines in my basement. I'm a collector, all right? So
doesn't mean you're Tommy.
That depends.
And Pinball Wizard or wherever it was.
Hey, listen, at the last show up in Ann Arbor, I got my initials on a couple of boards, and so did my daughter. So we're not terrible at this.
Can you put the blindfold on like he could?
No, I can't play with the blindfold. I'm not that good. but the thing is, so the thing that I think is so amusingly funny about this, though, is that here's all this all this stuff, right, that's going on with these, and yet if you look at Bitcoin, on a objective basis, okay, I know people say, well, there's no such thing. Well, yeah, actually, there kind of is. The biggest problem you have with that as a financial entity is that the cost in power and the demurrage on the cards, okay, on the ASICs, because it used to be NVIDIA cards that were being used, is why you couldn't buy one of these cards at anything close to its retail price. They were all marked up like crazy because they were being bid up in excess of supply. But the cost to actually put one of these Bitcoin into existence is like in the area of like $115,000. Now, this didn't used to be the case, but this is the nature of exponential functions. This always happens. All right, so I have now, and the problem is, in order to confirm the transaction, your transaction has to go through the people who provide this service as part of mining the coins. So there is a really serious problem here in that as this sequence progresses, this is a classic Ponzi scheme that is guaranteed to collapse because the cost of production and tied to production is clearing exceeds the value of the coin. Now, once that happens, you are in a death spiral, and the only reason that it doesn't have that it hasn't crashed is that the coyote has run off the cliff, but he hasn't looked down yet. And as soon as he does, gravity's going to show up. Well, guess what? Hello, why do you think we're trading at 83,645 right now? Okay, on the futures for Bitcoin, might be because somebody looked down.
Well, you had somebody on TV yesterday saying that the amount of money circling at 75,000 looking to buy in here, and when they reaches that number, you got to get in because the ride up is gonna be so much faster than the ride down. And I'm like, how does anybody know that? I mean,
well, Chief, they don't. It's but again, my opinion of where the stock market's going tomorrow is not punishable if I'm wrong.
Well, but the stock market, though, you have clues. I mean, at some point, I started.
No, all this analysis is same that, I mean, I look at these, I can look at the chart of the SPX, okay, over the last year, okay. Well, guess what? Yesterday was a massive outside reversal.
I've never seen one bigger, have you?
Without
some sort of an event.
But boy, you don't want to see one that, I mean, you look at this and you go, oh, crap, right?
I'm saying when I started, the Dow was 800, Carl. Okay, so
I get you.
Yeah, but you could look at a stock and you'd say, okay, somehow with 10 years of stagflation, these guys are still stocks trading $20. They're making, $3 a share and are sending me a check for two. And it seems like they're hanging in there. So there's value to it. I guess I really didn't care. They went to 18 for a few weeks or something because they're still sending me a check for two. But I'm looking now at some of these people, even NVIDIA. Now, these guys have had incredible growth. I mean, I don't really like the chairman much. I don't know why I don't. But
well, here's the so I looked at I have an article up this morning. I looked at their 10Q. Okay, there's nothing in the stuff that's flying around on social media about there's this hidden in there and that hidden in there. And I looked at the Q and I said, well, you're just flat out. Yesterday I was reading through it, and you're just flat full of crap, okay? I mean, that's just garbage. There's nothing wrong in the quarterly report that screams imminent collapse to me. Okay, there's nothing there, and I looked for it.
Well, it depends on what you're looking
for. No. Here's the problem, okay? You've got very serious revenue growth. All right, and everyone's screaming about the receivables going up. Well, it's true, they are. but they're going up at a slower rate than the revenue's advancing. What the hell's wrong with that? Right?
Okay, but now, but your revenue, by the way, the revenue is extraordinary how fast it's...
I understand that.
For the trailing 12 months, I'm looking at revenue per share.
Yeah.
For the trailing was like $7. Then it was 34 a quarter. Let's say this quarter was $57 a share. Record revenue, $57 billion is the revenue.
Yeah.
So let's say you give this guy every kudo on earth and say for the next four, it's going to be 70. So it's going to go up even more. So let's say $280 billion in revenue. All right, so they've got 25 billion shares outstanding, which don't ever forget that about this company. It's an extraordinary amount of shares. So we're talking $12 or $13 a share in revenue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we're in the stock's trading 180. Right. It's still 50. In your wildest dreams, you're just giving them every revenue number you possibly could. They're still 13, 14 times revenue. And by the way, Microsoft is as well. So you are right. If you say the revenue is growing like a weed, it is. But boy, it better.
Right. And my exact point is this, okay? The problem with all of this is that it is all centered, all of this revenue growth is coming from a part of their business.
It's four or five companies, right?
Well, leave the number of companies out of it,
okay,
because I'm talking about the part of the business, okay? So for, you know, when I ran MCS, we had several parts of our business, okay? We sold direct access to the internet to most of it, individual customers, but not all, because we had large institutions and organizations that bought blocks of accounts because they wanted access for their people at their desk, but they could also use it at home. All right? So, you know, so they would buy a block of 100 accounts from us, all right, and hand them out to their employees. All right? Now, they got quite a nice discount from that because they got one invoice.
Was this phone in?
Yeah, this was back when it was all dial-up stuff.
Yeah.
All right? So, you know, but they got a nice discount for that because it was one bill and one check, okay, and one customer service contact. And, you know, I mean, okay, we still had all the tech support people because, you know, my computer screwed up at the house. And, you know, but my operating cost for that person, for each of those accounts, was lower. So, okay, so we were able to be quite competitive. But then we also had another line of business, which was selling dedicated circuits to commercial customers, large corporations, you know, media organizations, libraries, things like this, that were, you know, were DS1s and things like that. Okay, that's another line of business. It's still internet access, but it's another line of business. And then we had a third line of business, which was the virtual web hosting, which we were the first people to figure out how to do it. So we had that as a line of business. All right, NVIDIA makes GPU cards, all right, in various forms. Chips that go on to boards and become, and by the way, they don't make the board, okay? The one that's in my computer is made by MSI, but it has a NVIDIA chip on it, all right? The actual graphics processor chip is made by NVIDIA, but the board's not made by
NVIDIA. But that big honking thing that they sell overseas and stuff, that's all them, right? Or is it?
Well, yes, but the point is that they have several lines of business. One of them is cards that go into conventional, you can buy them, PCs. Okay, that's a line of business. Now, that's the one that got distorted tremendously by the Bitcoin people up until the point that it became uneconomic to use them, and then those sales essentially went to zero. All right? Because all the Bitcoin people went to custom ASICs because it was no longer economic to use their cards as the cost continued to go up. Fine, except, so what comes up next is this AI stuff. But the problem is there's two kinds of AI, all right? And there's two separate, distinct lines of business for NVIDIA there. And God forbid if you think one of them somehow means the other, because you're going to be on the wrong end of this thing when it comes apart. And I think people are finally starting to figure this out. So you can buy today a relatively inexpensive machine that has their AI series chip in it, one of them. It's about 10 grand. Okay, it's not a, that's a high-end computer for someone's desktop, but it's not stupid money, right? I mean, it's not a, you know, $500,000 machine or $10 million machine. It's 10 grand, all right?
And that must be a nice machine.
It is designed to run AI type of things against limited data sets. That sort of use is essentially the same thing that my forum software has been doing for the last 15 years, in that you can do a full text search on all the things that have ever been posted there, millions of articles, and within a tiny fraction of a second, it can come back with all the results. And the reason it does that is because English, like every other language, has stems to words. So the computer does not have to index each actual word. It knows that it's capable of separating that out. So the root word and its plural, its past participle form, all are one entry. All right? Now, what that means in turn is that I can also do comparisons and searches and things like this, and it's extremely fast. And now, artificial intelligence against for example, your inventory, okay, the products you sell in your company, which is a bounded data set with weighting and analyzed against that way to provide you with business intelligence, that is essentially just an extension of what databases have been doing for the last 30 years. And
well, it's a constant progression.
No, I'm saying there is value in that product. Okay.
Value when it's going to break for the first time. Our S&P futures up 35. Right. When we come back, you can tell us how we turned a flip here this morning. We were down 100 and some in the Nasdaq. Now they're up 124. We'll be right back.
I know what that was too.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Loading up X, Stocks and Jacks. I'm out. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 35. NASDAQ futures up 121. We spun around this morning here as New York Fed Williams says we might have a quarter point rate cut in December. Anybody who thinks that what all the stuff is going on with the market and maybe some overpricing, what's happening in Bitcoin and the carnage that happened yesterday in the market, anybody who thinks a quarter point rise in the, or drop in the interest rate is the cure all for all this stuff, God bless. Please don't think that. I mean, it might help, it might do something, but to think that all your problems, all your illnesses, everything will be cured by that. Just don't go there. I hope. Euro, DAX down 97.4%. Little this is catch up on yesterday, but they were down yesterday as well. FTSE down 10.1%. CAC round down 3. Call that flat. So slightly to the downside over in Europe. Asia, Nikkei down 1100. That's 2.4%. Hang Seng down 615, 2.4%. Shanghai down 96, 2.4%. So they're amazingly even across the board, but down. Oil, whack, whack, whack here, down 65 cents. It was down more. It was down almost 2%. It's 58.35, so under the 60. And I don't know what yesterday all the big headlines were, that the administration is going to force more and more drilling in California offshore and everything. I don't know how much more oil we need. It's $60 a barrel, but that would just be me. Brent up down 54 cents, 62.84. Gold up 6.30, still above 4,000, 4,066, but it turned down yesterday with the market. Silver, however, is going the other way. Silver's down almost 2%, 95 cents. It's down to 49.34. Foreign exchange, euro's about the same, 115.2. Same thing with the pound. Well, the pound is actually under 131, 130.79. So the dollar probably a little. The yen is the one that's all over the place. It's 156.82. Now that's the other side. That's yen per dollar. It's not dollar per yen. So as that goes up, it means that the yen value is actually going down. So just be careful with that one. Crypto. This has been the problem. We've actually bounced back a little bit here this morning, but still we're 84,000 bounced back from earlier this morning, not from yesterday. We're still down 2,400 on the day. Ethereum, 2,753, that's down another $82. That's almost 3%. Stuff is down heavy, but it's not as down as much as we were last May. So people are thinking those might be the bottoms, but we'll see on that. Careful about picking bottoms. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:44 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 44 degrees right now with a high of 48. Mostly cloudy today, and tonight will remain the same. Cloudy and turning out clear late with a low of 39 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now with a high of 64. Rather cloudy and cool tonight. Tonight will be overcast with a low of 54 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 20 minutes. We're looking at 33 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes. 26 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 34 minutes. Kraken beat Blackhawks yesterday, 3-2. But they have a chance for redemption today as they face Sabres at 6 p.m. today here at home. Miami Heat beat Bulls. Miami Heat is going playing Bulls today at 7 p.m. Timberwolves at Suns at 8 p.m. And lastly, NFL, Texans beat Bills 23-19 yesterday. And this Sunday, November 23, we have Steelers at Bills at 12 p.m. and Jaguars at Cardinals at 3:05 p.m. Back over to you guys.
So Carl, there's nothing on last night. I've gotten so out of the habit of watching hockey because the Hawks have sucked for so long. I've been watching a little bit, so I turn them on. It's the third period. They're winning 2-0, and the announcers are—they've been playing well. So I mean, they're sounding like it's fait accompli, right?
Right.
All of a sudden, the other guys get a goal, and the other guys get another goal. So now the Hawks get this almost a breakaway with their young star Connor Bedard, and he's heading down the ice. Guys behind him. It's clearly a penalty. Either a penalty or it should have been a shot, for God's sake. He doesn't call it. So Connor Bedard goes up to the ref and starts bitching at him. So the guy calls a penalty on Bedard for unsportsmanlike conduct.
But, yeah, of course.
And so then, of course, the other guys get the power play and win 3-2.
Oh, God.
I'm like, really? What possessed me to turn this on?
So anyway, what I was pointing out this thing with the so-called not bubble that actually is, all right, and in lines of business. So there's two elements to AI. One of them is essentially an enhancement to existing database technology that's been in use by businesses for the last 35 years.
And it's a real enhancement, right?
And it's a real enhancement. It has value, and by the way, it's pretty cheap. Now there's a problem with this for NVIDIA, which is that's a box with one chip in it per company that deploys it. All right? One box. All right? So it's like me. I do video editing. I got one card, right, that does video editing. All right. Now, there's a real business there. However, it's not a very big business. And then you have these clowns, the Metas and the Googles and everybody else and the X's, that are putting up these enormous data centers with thousands of these chips in them that are using them to train and run these large language models. There has not yet been a single application of that part of the so-called artificial intelligence space that has a positive ROI demonstrated, or even close to one. All right, so we are not even in that world is entirely driven by hype and fear of missing out. It's all FOMO. Every last penny of the expenditure in that space is flushed it down the toilet. And when that gets recognized in the marketplace, you're not going to see NVIDIA go to zero because that other part of their business is, there's nothing wrong with it. However, all that FOMO stuff all of a sudden disappears. And oh, by the way, all that current hardware is, if it's this last cycles, is going to sell for 50% of list, and if it's two cycles back, once one prior, it's going to go for 10 cents on the dollar or less.
But who's the most when I look at the Microsoft here, and again, I
the entire tech sector, Chief, is chock full of this crap.
Okay,
in terms
but
of their
what
price.
What I'm trying to get is, and I know you haven't done it for all these other stacks, but Microsoft's a pretty friggin' big company.
Yeah.
I mean, their revenue per share, I got them at like 13, a share too, 13 times. And that's,
yeah, that's nuts.
It's insanely high for anybody who's not in a huge... What percentage of Microsoft, what percentage of Meta, what percentage of, I don't know about Amazon so much, but some percentage, what percentage are they, you know, over their skis on this stuff? I mean, if it's 10% of Microsoft's expenditures in business, I'm not going to worry so much about Microsoft. I might worry about another 40
Microsoft
bucks.
Microsoft isn't going to blow up, but their price is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I could see it down another 50 bucks, but it's not like it's not going to go out of business or anything like that.
No, they're not going to go out of business. Microsoft is not going to go out of business, but Microsoft will sell for $100 a share.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the problem is, you take a look at all these different companies and where they are and what percentage of that Mag 7 is the S&P, and the S&P falls by half.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to work it up from the bottom like I like to do.
All I'm saying, see, the problem
But they're not all the same. It's a different percentage of Microsoft than it is to Apple. Apple still makes a boatload of money on other stuff. The run-up in Oracle traded 3-something, it's down to 209. Well, hell, if you bought Oracle at the top, you're already getting a margin call. I mean, I don't know, I can't even begin to describe what Palantir does, because they're like a buck and a half revenue per share. I mean,
right. Palantir is may have enough leverage on that they actually go kaboom. Although, and be careful, though, because, you know, people say, well, you know, the government will never let that happen because they use, you know, a lot of their services. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I believed that about MCI, and piled into their stuff as their stock was collapsing, because they had like 70% of the government.
That was a huge.
Well, they had like 70% of the government's dedicated line business. I didn't think the government would let them fail, and I knew this because
this is a different government. These guys are very
well. I'll tell you what, I was dead wrong about that, and I still lick that wound. Okay.
Well, I'm saying, but right now it appears that, you know, if you could have a list of, you know, who the knaves, whatever you want to call them, in the White House got their eye on the 10 next companies they're going to invest in to get us with this full German model here. I think I'd want to be long every one of those companies.
No, you don't. Not at these prices, you don't.
I didn't say that the day the announcement came out I wouldn't sell it.
No.
I'd like to be long it for the announcement.
Listen, you might want to be long it at when the S&P trades 1576 again, because then the announcement actually has something to base on and move it higher. But here, no. And the problem is that all of the hype about this, it's not in the $10,000 box that goes into your company. You stick it on your network, it analyzes your inventory flow, and it gives you actionable intelligence that actually, you know, can help your margin.
How hard is it to get somebody to set all that up for you? I mean, is it that knowledge out there pretty easily now, or easily?
Well, it's the operating. There's nothing preventing you from running different operating systems, but the software that comes with the box runs on Linux, so it's fairly well understood by people in the IT space. The part of the problem you have right now is that there really aren't that many people who are actually good at programming anymore, because you've got all these, you know, all these assistants, and as a result, the, you know, $20 a day guy in India there's a stupid amount of distortion in that part of the software business. All right, and it needs to come out.
Question.
That's part of immigration policy and everything else.
Are there tariffs on services?
Generally speaking, no.
I don't think so, is there?
Although there's ways to do it, but not, I mean, not really, but there's ways to do it, okay, to effectively do it. But in the general case, no. So, I mean, it's, yeah. But this is, look, what you're seeing is this start of people looking at this in the marketplace, and eventually, what's going to end up happening here is that all the companies that are putting up these data centers, you're going to have to show revenue in excess of costs. Okay, whether it's finance costs or not.
Well, but people will push if they're giddy about something, they'll push it out 10 years like a railroad or whatever. But someplace somewhere,
you're not going to get 10 years because the problem is the turn cycle in technology equipment's two.
I get that, but I'm saying if it's moving up, I mean, why do people own Bitcoin? Because it was moving up. There isn't anybody to explain to you what the hell it is that owns it.
Okay, well, guess what? If you bought it at 110, how's your back door feeling about right now?
Well, that's right. I also know, and this is why, you know, first of all, we don't have any. But if I were to pop a chart, if I was one of these talking heads and I popped a chart out there about turtle eggs in Zimbabwe and how they've gone up every month for the last 5 years, I guarantee you I'd get a check for turtle eggs. People have no idea. Obviously people think they know what a turtle egg is, but it could be chocolate ones for all they know. I mean, it is. But if it's going up, they're buying it, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is.
And then you get to there must be something there because people are buying it. It must be worth something.
I just look at this stuff and I go, what the F? You know, the basic problem when you analyze all this stuff in the large AI space, which is where all the demand is coming from that's driving this craze, all right, across data centers, across the hardware companies, across all this other stuff, and the companies that are consuming it right now are, you know, large multi-billion-dollar corporations. They're the Metas, the Googles, the IBMs, and the Microsofts of the world.
We don't have that much time, but what is? And we had Kevin sent the thing out last week, which we need to talk about one of these days. Is IBM doing all this work and security for China and their own people there and here, which probably means we could do it with our people here pretty easy. What exactly is IBM's game there? Are they the new Harold Janine? They don't care about people. I mean, they go up like every week. This IBM has been, nobody even talks about it. It's got to be one of the best performing stocks in the last 18 months ever.
Yeah, it's that one. There's, you know, I've seen that movie before, and then I saw the backside of it too. And there was, I won't go into the fine details.
Well, SAC made it up to 310. Now it's 293. But for God's sake, in last April it was 221, and the beginning of the year it was in 210.
Well, this was a company that kind of had a trading range between 100 and 140 for, what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah. Well, let me go back to all time here. I'll expand.
Yeah, well, and then all of a sudden it takes off, right? I mean, but this is, you know, this is also a firm that for an awfully long time was, you know, was trading under $40. I don't know. I just, the IBM thing.
5/1/23, it was $125 and...
Yeah,
you know, and where are we at here? 215. It was $130. So yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I look at a long-term chart, and you know, you could see all the way back to 2015. You know, you had this. I mean, you had a little spike above, you had a little spike below, but you're kind of trading that $100-$140 area for an awfully long time, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it takes off, and it's part of this AI craze. But I think this is extremely dangerous. For everybody, from a standpoint of where this heads down the road, because there just isn't there isn't a floor under this that is anywhere near where people are thinking it might be. All right, I mean, you just look at the where does this realistically end up flooring out back from when this stuff started to take off? And the answer is in the S&P 500, you're talking about a 50% haircut or more.
Well, we're up. I mean, this year, or even now, with the Qs got up to 635. Now yeah. They're down to 588. But I mean, we're talking it was in the low fours this year a couple times. And if you went back, I don't even want to go back to where the thing was before COVID.
Well,
we're talking 2010 is too far, but. Let's say 2020, you know, we're talking 150.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's had tremendous, and it's a lot of it is the 6-7. Just, we don't have a couple of minutes here, Carl, but just to explain how this happens. I mean, I think the listeners know what I'm talking about here, but when you have a capitalization weight.
Well, you have a survivor's bias, too.
Yeah. Well, you also have a capitalization valued. The Dow is price weighted. Every dollar of every stock in the Dow goes up or down, means the Dow moves like $7, give or take. And the other part, if if NVIDIA is your highest priced stock, it might be 8-9% of the Qs. Of the, let's say 10%, which it isn't, but let's say 10%. Well, if NVIDIA goes up 10%, not only do the Qs go up 10%, it's now a little bigger piece of the Qs than before. It might be 10.5%.
Right.
So now the next 10% NVIDIA goes up, the Qs go up 10.5%, and oh, by the way, now it's worth 11% of the Qs.
Right.
So it when you get bigger like that, not only does the price keep going up, but your percentage change in the Qs is gets bigger and bigger as you go, the same way on the way down. So that's why those five or six stacks are probably 50% of the value of the Qs, which is that's where we got in 2000. You know, it's kind of a danger point in terms of concentration.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
It's also 25 years later. It's a different world. These companies are a lot bigger. There's never going to be any antitrust. Every time they find some company they like, they just buy it. Nobody cares. So you could make the argument that our whole system of value of companies and the way we live and do stuff, and we may turn out to be, I'll use the German fascist system, where there's only going to be four companies in every industry. I hope we don't get there, but it seems like that's where we're heading, isn't it?
Well,
and if you, you and I are valuing stuff on the old way, that there is some competition. If you get too off all your skis, there's going to be a correction. You get slapped back. I don't know. Government so involved. I don't see much slapping back.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think this is going to be anything. You know, I think people that are expecting there to be some kind of different thing. Boy, I think there's trouble.
Well, I mean, look at the banks, Carl. I mean, there's four banks. I'm going to say at least two of them. Well, I should research. At least two of them have been in defiance of a law saying how bigger you can be for what, a decade. It's got to be Wells Fargo and the other. Nobody's ever going to say you got to get smaller. Nobody's ever said if they wanted to buy somebody tomorrow, they'd let them. So the idea of those four banks ever going under, they could have gone under what, probably two or three times in the last 40 years, and every time they get bailed out. So how do you even vote that one? And when I say vote, dollar vote that one in terms of valuation. It's another variable into the mix where you and I already had 40 variables. Now we got 41 or two. Now you got a president bailing people out. It's another variable. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's not my style, but it's now something you got to think of, right? The Fed. Are we going to start dropping interest rates when we know it's crazy because we're already entering a stagflation? The last thing we want to do is interest rates lower. They're going to probably do it though. Now, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's why we keep talking, Carl.
I'm just saying. I think we've got big trouble in Little China, and it's here. But you're still going to have the spiky stuff that go, oh, well, you know, the Fed's going to save us. No, they're not.
Well, somewhere, do you think the Fed has any clue? Because I don't think I do. The Fed has any clue of the leverage and the Bitcoins worldwide?
No, I don't think they have any good way to do it.
If Bitcoin, and this is no prediction, if Bitcoin, the day after Thanksgiving, when we're on the air, if Bitcoin's trading 20 grand, where's the hurt? There's some people living in Puerto Rico because they don't want to pay the taxes. They don't have to worry about taxes anymore. There's some people in Russia, some drug cartels that probably have half their dough in there. I don't really care if they lose it, to be honest with you. But where's the hurt? It's always someplace we never thought it was going to be, Carl. When 2008 happened and there were some banks in Germany that had trouble that I knew the names of a lot of the banks here. I never heard of these guys, and all of a sudden they got all these mortgage debt. Always some place where you never drew. Where do you think it is? Oh, I mean, this massive Bitcoin wealth, is it regular people?
Well, I think part of the problem is that it's been used as collateral in places that are off sheet, and therefore it's going to be very, very difficult to to kind of figure that one out.
Well, you'll figure it out if they don't pay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You'll find out when the defaults start, right?
Yeah.
that's what happens. Give me the money. Okay.
God. Hey, you know, you're a marathon runner. The guys who came out for the funeral the other day were from the Wilmington VFW, right? So, of course, I kick up the Wilmington VFW. Half pound burgers $7.99. A double's $10.99. I don't know if I can eat the double anymore. There was a time I'd have dropped it, but are you man enough for the double half pounder?
Oh, I could probably do that. Sure. I wouldn't eat the bun, though.
Oh, God. That's cheating. You know, if you go out
and eat.
But if you go out, they say eat the 100-ounce steak and it's free, you got to eat the potato. Right. You can't leave the potato.
Well, I understand that, but I want the protein and the fats. I don't want the carbs.
I understand what I'm saying.
That's all it is.
There would have been a time where there would have been a gleam in my eye after playing ball for 2 hours or something. Now I'm going, how the hell am I going to eat this thing?
as long as you give me a knife and a fork, I'm good.
You're good to go. All right. So you're around Thanksgiving, right?
The day after.
Okay. All right, bud.
Yeah, you bet.
S&P futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 95. Again, this turn this morning when the New York Fed guy said the quarter point's back on the table in December, so we'll see if that lasts. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.